Councilmember, it is, or council meeting, sorry. It is November 21st and time is 7:01 PM. Liz, will you call roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutabatt, Hanford, Rasmussen, and Camp.
And Mayor Thomas did contact me this evening, letting me know that he did have to go into work this evening. And Councilmember Gamble called and said he is running a few minutes late, so without objection, we'll consider them excused. Councilmember Camp, you will lead us in the pledge.
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We do have a couple of presentations tonight. First up, starting with the Snohomish Health District, we've got Administrator Jeff Getchell. Mr. Getchell.
Thank you, Councilmember Rasmussen.
All right, here I go.
I have one.
Let's move.
Thank you, Council, for having me back before you this evening. I'm here tonight to update you with goings-on at the Snohomish Health District and to talk about what we're working on for 2018. This is the clicker here. So for those in the audience, you've seen a lot of the materials that I've been talking about tonight are out on the table in the lobby. So when I came before the Monroe City Council earlier this summer, I talked about our plan for making Snohomish County and the City of Monroe simpler, safer, and healthier through a number of our initiatives. And we're continuing to work on a number of those. A couple of them I want to mention that are outlined in this sort of purple, blue, and green sheet that's a part of your packet. Is firstly, on the simpler front, we've now launched a new program called Envision Connect Online. And it's a new portal where from your home you can now purchase and renew permits, submit applications, request, and get birth and death certificates paid for and mailed back to you. And it's providing a great way for people to do business from the home and out without having to come all the way downtown to Everett to conduct business with us and save traffic and time and gas, but also just makes things a lot more efficient on our end, not having to have long lines and lots of staff at our front desk. So this is something that we just recently launched, and we're very excited about this long time in the coming. Also on the safer front, we have one of our healthy community specialists specializes in suicide. When I was here last summer, I talked specifically about some of the suicide issues in Snohomish County. She conducted a training called Words Matter Responsible Suicide Reporting, but unfortunately folks from the Monroe School District couldn't attend due to a conflict. And so she came out to the Monroe School District and did a special two-hour training just for them. And this is some of the services that we provide along those lines. So keep on rolling here.
Yeah, I apologize.
No, I like the fact that this is keeping me on my toes. And this is going on to slide number three. This has been a year of transition for the Snohomish Health District. So we've in the process of selling our building in downtown Everett. We've received an offer from the City of Everett, and they're in the process of due diligence with us. And then also we have made an offer on another building in the downtown Everett core, and that we're going through beginning our own due diligence process with that as well. So through the course of the next year or so, we'll see how this all turns out, but we're continuing to move in that direction. We've also had a number of leadership changes. Our leadership staff is now solidified. I am now the permanent administrator. We also have a permanent health officer in Dr. Mark Beatty. And so we're very pleased that after 7 months, that issue has been settled. We've also had a number of discussions regarding should we merge with Snohomish County or not. And the Snohomish County executive hired former council member Dave Gossett to do a merger analysis. That was the point of some of my discussion when I was here last summer. While he didn't have a specific recommendation in his report, he did outline a number of areas that really spoke to us from being an independent agency. And our Board of Health unanimously passed Resolution 17-22, which you should also have, regarding their desire to remain an independent agency. So Wind Health District feel that this issue has been put to rest, and we're going to remain independent. Some of the advantages of being an independent health district is we can be nimble and scrappy and responsive. We have very little bureaucracy in our system. We tend to react to things as quickly as possible. We're able to maintain our public health focus. We're less likely to be subject to politicization of things. As a member of the county, one of the things that we're always concerned about is we regulate a number of the activities of the county, like their solid waste facilities. And so that's being kept separate. And then lastly, the cost of providing services. In Snohomish County, the average Snohomish County employee gets $440 more a year in medical and dental benefits than the average Snohomish Health District employee. So for health district employees to move up to the county level of cost would be about $600,000. And so at the end of the day, it just made a lot of financial and operational sense for us to remain independent. One of the things in Mr. Gossett's report had to talk about that the Snohomish Health District really lacked mission clarity. And so we've been doing a lot of work on what we call chief health strategist. And as a chief health strategist, what does that really mean? So a chief health strategist, we like to be able to respond and react and work on no matter what's going on in our community. Now, a lot of our funding sources are very categorical, very specific. They can only be used for certain things. But like with opioids or suicide, some of the other things that are going on in Snohomish County, we need to be able to be responsive no matter what's happening. There it is. Thank you much.
All right. Real quick, if I can just jump in and say for the record, Councilmember Gamble, right, 706. Thank you.
Try to focus. Here we go. Chief Health Strategist. And so with a more flexible funding sources and things like that, we're able to respond to the things going on beyond the regular foodborne illness, beyond the regular mumps and measles outbreaks and things like that. Under two is being able to identify and analyze big new data. One of the things that you'll see in your packet is a 7-day opioid count that we conducted last July regarding the numbers of. Oh, thank you. Thanks. Did I get the wrong dot?
I don't know where that. Can't really read that. So. Go ahead.
Okay. And in that 7-day count, we found a number of about 35 overdoses during that 1-week period. But this is the first time we've taken that data directly from service providers. Law enforcement participated, EMS, hospitals, the syringe exchange in Everett. And so after that week period of time, a week later, we were able to put this report together. And so being able to handle things in real time. Third is being able to collaborate with a broad array of allies. And one of the most important of those allies is the cities. And so when I joined the Snohomish Health District about 2.5 years ago, coming from Grant County, in Grant County, we had very strong relationships with our local cities. The local cities there funded us at $1 or $2 per capita. Every single year was a priority for them. They had very strong relationships with health district. We worked on different policy issues. And so when I got here to Snohomish County, I was very surprised and disappointed that the Snohomish Health District did not have strong relationships with the city, and that made me very sorry. As a new administrator, that's something that I'm working to rectify. And having strong, close relationships with the cities is extremely important to me and extremely important to the agency. And so regardless of how or where the future takes us, you can count on us to continue to have a strong presence here in Monroe and continue to build and have a strong partnership. And then lastly, updating our organizational practices. We have a very outdated IT system. Our IT system right now is, for example, our financial software is from 1997, and we've just bought a new system, and it's going to be coming online here in spring. Very excited about that. A lot of our servers are outdated. We've entered into an agreement with Snohomish County for them to oversee our IT work. I got a little bit of a line here. Also in the modernization effort, you may recall the Ruckles House Center report from about a year ago, and some of the issues in that center report was had to do with our governance and how does a Board of Health that meets once a month for 2 hours get all the business done of this very robust, diverse, Leviathan-like public agency. And so we've since instituted a committee system where we now have three committees up and running that meet monthly, that conduct the majority of the health district's business. And so now our Board of Health meetings, we're able to get the rest of the business done, knowing that these committees are doing a lot of the work upstream. On public health accreditation, that there's a national standard for local and state public health agencies. We're currently in the process of becoming accredited and look to achieve that in 2019. It is a very large process. We've assigned one of our managers full-time on this body of work. Sort of the three big areas in public health accreditation is performance management, quality improvement, and workforce development. So all areas that we're looking forward to improve upon. Funding sustainability, this has been a big issue. So in public health, and I've worked in local public health for 23 years, our funding sources are extremely unreliable. So I don't know if you remember back in 1999, Initiative 695 passed. That was the first of Mr. Eyman's initiative, the $30 card tabs. Well, that tax was a primary source of public health funding in Washington State, and it's never ever been replaced. And since then, for the past 17 years, we've really tried to hodgepodge and keep our operations going the best we can between federal, state, and local sources and fees. One of the examples is we oversee a hospital preparedness program for all of the five counties in the North Sound. We receive $280,000 a year from the federal government to do that. And that's coordinating all the hospitals, clinics, long-term care facilities to be prepared for an emergency. What happens if there's a major earthquake, a major disease outbreak, whatever, what have you? Are they prepared? Are they coordinated? Are they ready to go? Well, the White House just a few months ago proposed to cut all of Washington State's funding for the hospital preparedness program. And that would have wiped out our ability to coordinate our entire healthcare system in Washington and prepare for emergency. Now, there's always a difference between what the White House says and what Congress wants to do. So that cut didn't come to pass. But that's just sort of an example of how tenuous things are day in, day out regarding public health funding. That one piece may be cut at any certain time. So what we can do is do the best with what we have and be as predictable as we can. And so as I've taken over as administrator, I've continued to peel back the onion of the Snohomish Health District and looking at its operations. And what I found was that we weren't maximizing our grants and contracts the best we could. And so we have a number of different grants coming in, like the hospital preparedness program and others, where we were leaving some money on the table, that we weren't utilizing all of it. And we didn't have a good system in place for monitoring between our business office and our program managers. We've since instituted a better system, and with the new financial software coming out next spring, it'll be even better than that, and I look forward to that helping to narrow the gap a bit. We also carry a larger than normal fund balance for an agency of our size, and the reason is, without a guaranteed funding source, we need to be able to prepare if suddenly a serious amount of our funding sources get cut 1 year, we can maintain our minimum operations until that gets resolved. But in talking with Mr. Gossett while he was compiling this report, is there a way to use the fund balance to ease between bad and good years without cutting services and programs? And that's something I want to work with the Board of Health on in 2018. On permits and fees, we conducted a 12-month time study of all of our environmental health staff, looking about how much actual time and resources it took to complete the different types of environmental health activities. And at the last Board of Health meeting, the board approved a new fee schedule reflective of the actual cost of doing business. This was also a very much simplified fee schedule. We used to have a very long fee schedule with many, many different types of permits and fees. We narrowed it down and made it a lot simpler. So if you're a restaurant, instead of having to pick from 100 different types of permits, maybe there's like 40 now. So it's a little bit simpler for the user, on the user side. And also, I mean, you can imagine some of the fees went up, but also some of the fees went down because it was a true reflection of the work that was being completed. We also had a small amount of success with the legislature this year. You may be familiar with the Public Health is Essential campaign, and that essentially is we believe it's the state's responsibility to fund the very basic of public health services, so every Washingtonian is afforded them. And we asked the legislature for a $60 million down payment. They gave us 12, so one-fifth. But what that means is $437,000 a year for the next 2 years for us to specifically work on communicable disease and sexually transmitted diseases. And I believe when I was here over the summer, I talked about some of the chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis rates in Snohomish County, which continue to rise. And so this investment of funding is timely. And then on value and partnership, really want to make sure that Monroe sees the value in the Snohomish Health District, that whatever it is that's going on in Monroe, whatever your interests are, whatever your agenda is, that public health has a role to play in it, and we're here to serve you and the people of Monroe. And I want to dive into an example of that with opioids. So when I came here last fall, we talked about what the Snohomish Health District was doing specifically with growing opioids. And we really had three kind of areas we were working on. One was supporting the syringe exchange. Two was the medicine return ordinance, which has since been implemented. And lastly was a lot of work with at-risk mothers and young children. And when I came to you, I said, what we're proposing to do is, in 2017, is increase some of those things. And we've had a good amount of success in those. One of those has to do with needle cleanup, the second from the bottom on response. With the city money, we were able to put together 1,000 of these needle cleanup kits. So you may have seen on TV news about a month or so ago some moms and coaches that were having to go out to their parks and play fields and clean up syringes so their kids could play or practice on those fields. And so in partnership with that, we put these needle kits together, and already about 500 of these have been distributed out to the community. Both some cities have asked that we outfit their cars with them, and a lot of private citizens have come in, and it's been helpful with doing just needle cleanups around the community. If they're going to do a big needle cleanup, we'll provide a bigger needle box than this. And one of the key parts about this program is when this is full, you can bring it back to us, and we'll take care of the disposal costs. Now, trying to create a more simpler system, even beyond that, we're working with Snohomish County Solid Waste to allow people to bring these needle boxes back to one of their facilities. And so I'm working with them to see if there's a way we can implement that to keep costs down and keep things even more simple. Another thing we're working on is social marketing. And we helped to host a number of heroin forums around Snohomish County last year. And one of the consistent messages we received was that there was no one-stop shopping for opioid information in Snohomish County. The county had some information, the health district had some information, and a few other places as well. And so we created a one-stop shop called SnohomishOverdosePrevention.com, and there's some postcards and refrigerator magnets in front of you. And this is something we've put out in the community. There's a social media presence as well. You may have seen or heard of the press conference that occurred yesterday between Sheriff Trenary, Executive Summers, and Dr. Beatty, our health officer, launching a joint plan in response to the opioid crisis here in Snohomish County. And this website's going to be the main hub for where that information is going to be tracked. And then lastly, we talked about the need for better data, and that seven-day count is an example of some of the work we're doing during that. So as we look forward to 2018, we're looking to continue to expand our opioid response. On the bottom, under prevention, under safe storage, we've begun to distribute bags, safe medicine, secure medicine bags for people who are prescribed medications and need to lock them up in their home. This is like a banker bag. It has a lock on it and it zips up. And while somebody could definitely break into this if they really wanted to, you're going to know. So if you have a bottle of Vicodin sitting in your medicine cabinet, how are you going to know if your teenager or your teenager's friends, or if your guests or contractors who may be in the house aren't taking a few of your pills, and this is going to help it keep it secure. Also, if you're going on a trip, it'll keep it secure in your luggage as well. And this is just a great prevention tool. Another thing we're working on, just above that, is a focus on prescriptions. So my wife had surgery this summer, and the last 24 hours she spent in the hospital, all she needed was Tylenol. But when she got discharged, they wanted to send home a 60 OxyContin. Now, she's a nurse, and I do what I do, and we said, well, that's really not what we want, nor do we think she needs it. And we had a bit of a back and forth with our physician on this issue. And she ended up going home with 30 Vicodin, which she took none, and I have since taken and disposed of in one of the medicine return boxes. And so, Israel, should we be having conversations with the medical community about the prescribing practices? And something Dr. Beatty has begun to work on. We're also working on when there's an overdose that occurs, following up with the physician who prescribed those medications and notifying them of a fatal or non-fatal overdose of one of their patients, if in case they didn't know, because sometimes they don't know. So those are just a few of the things we're looking forward to in 2018. I'm really proud of the work we've done with the opioids. A number of the cities, when we came to you last year and asked for financial support, this was far and away the number one issue that they said they needed help with, and I'm glad we've taken some strong work on this. Now a number of cities are coming to us saying, you've started some good work on this, we want to see continued great work on this. Now what can you do about homelessness? Okay. But I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and get to work with the cities on this issue as well. Whether it's through policy innovation, whether it's through just through data analysis, just being part of the conversation. And if this is an issue that Monroe is interested in having conversations with the health district on, we're here to be of service to you. Thank you for your time tonight. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council, any questions tonight? Councilmember Kerbeck.
Thank you. One question. What other cities have agreed to the per capita contribution? I didn't see any of that in the packet. Where are you?
Right. No cities have approved their 2018 budget yet.
Wait, okay. Is there any that you know that are
Talking with some of the mayors and some of the councils,
yeah.
Snohomish has said it's in their budget. Arlington has said theirs. Mukilteo has said theirs. I need to follow up. Edmonds, it's not in their budget right now.
Right. Okay.
And remind me. There's only four cities who did not contribute this year. That was Briar, Mill Creek, Index, and Gold Bar. Oh, and Sultan. So there are only five that did not contribute this year.
For the 2017?
For 2017, correct.
Okay, there were five, okay.
That did not. But I've had some positive conversations with a couple of those cities.
Okay.
I now it's sort of that moment
right.
in time,
yeah.
Where we'll see who walks the walk.
Right.
And so, but I still feel, I've gotten a tremendous amount of positive feedback, and so I know you can't take positive feedback to the bank.
Right.
Through all my years in Grant County doing sort of a similar dance, trying to say who's in and who's out, and to how much, I trust my gut. I think it'll be a lot of status quo.
And so if you have developed your 2018 budget, which I'm sure you're developing now, are you counting on that revenue coming in?
Yeah, and so the budget I presented to the Board of Health in November, which they will consider for vote at the December Board of Health meeting, does include a flat
contribution,
a status quo amount from all the cities.
Okay.
So I know some cities may go up, some cities may go down, some cities may stay the same, but I've planned for a same amount. Now, if that's different one way or another, you know, we'll have to adjust.
Thank you.
Yep. And as I get more concrete information, I'd be happy to share that.
Okay.
I'm going to the next North County Mayor's meeting and talking about this.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Just real quick for the record, Councilmember Davis arrived at 7:23. Welcome. And Councilmember
Harris is Rasmussen, but I think it's Scarborough.
Follow up, move on. Kathy's question. In other words, your budget is predicated on what you've got in 17 from the city.
Yes.
And I think one of the questions we had for the last time we talked was, I think Mill Creek was the example. What did Mill Creek not get that all cities got that did
So
I'll rephrase.
Yeah,
the cities that contributed, what did they get more than the five cities that did not?
So they got a health district who was better able to invest in prevention. I mean, I know that sounds like a very vague non-answer, but without this kind of funding, we're going to be focusing strictly on response. And if we're strictly on the business, on the end of pipe type of work, you know, as you saw that in my letter, we're going to be tipping more and more in that direction. And we've been just on outbreak and response. I mean, we've just been the kid with the leaky dike, putting our fingers in the hole in the dike. You know, we got 10 fingers and 10 toes, but there's, you know, 23 holes. And so it's a matter of doing that dance. But the more we're able to do more on the prevention side, like I want to do more prevention around sexually transmitted diseases. I don't want to just be end of pipe cleaning up syringes in parks. I want to be preventing people from becoming addicted in the first place. But both of these are things that need to happen, but the syringes are the things that are in our face.
Right, and do you find that the opioid problem is a bigger problem than the sexual disease problem?
Well, they're definitely related. I mean, people who engage in risky behavior of one sort are more likely to engage in risky behavior of another sort. So yes, they're absolutely connected.
So that's part of your prevention problem.
I mean, the more we can prevent both STDs and opioids, I think we're looking to have to spend less money down the road on these types of things because there's less to respond to.
Thank you.
Council, any other questions? Mr. Gatchel, I just want to once again congratulate you on removing the interim title and becoming our health district administrator full time.
Thank you.
It's been just a pleasure working with you for the last 2 years and certainly seeing the strides that the health district has made over the last 2 years. So I do appreciate your leadership on the board.
Group. Thank you much.
Can I say anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have a presentation from Downtown Monroe Association's quarterly report of funding. We've got Joya Wortland with us tonight.
Good evening. We included in the packet a document that shows sort of the highlights of what we've been doing since mid-June to September. We're definitely unmoved. For June, most of the part of that month, we were working on a project trying to get some community feedback to give us some direction going forward. And so we had done a meeting and gave everybody post-it notes and Sharpies and had conversations and let them just continue to write ideas on the post-it notes. And at the end of it, we collected them and then compiled them all into this document, which was really wonderful to see a lot of the ideas that people had and also the like ideas that they had. So into July, we were working with the city and Becky on the LTAC applications, which we did a lot of legwork trying to make sure that we were moving in the right direction and that we were addressing the things that were in that community meeting and also things that we knew that we would be able to manage in 2018. It was a great experience, and we appreciate the city's support and assistance with that. It made it much, much easier for us to have that direction. As we went into August, we were finishing some of the projects that we had started. One was the SWIFT project, which is a smart downtown and probably two pieces, really. One is the historical part of, we've got 25 birds that we were named after, historical figures in Monroe, and they're going to be placed downtown for people to find them. And they're selling those, and then also we're selling the individual birds, which that you can have engraved to complete the statue that's downtown. And so we were working on that, and then I had to get it done for the September Swiss Knife Out. And we worked with Pilchuck Audubon and the Monroe Arts Council to complete that, to get that launched for the Swiss Knife Out. And then the rest of September, we started moving right into the annual Hoedown planning and organization. And so we've had a lot on our plate, but it's been a great experience, and hopefully, if you have any questions, I'll keep it kind of brief tonight.
Council, any questions? Councilmember Gamble.
No questions. Just appreciate you coming in and report and the work that the DMA is doing. In the last 6 years that I've been up here, is the best that the downtown has looked, and just the activity and the organization and everything that's going on. Just thanks for all the work.
Yeah, and a lot of businesses have contributed to that. They've really taken it upon themselves to do some painting and improvements, and it's exciting. Every time you get downtown, there's a little bit of activity down there that just keeps improving. So.
Looks really nice.
Anyone else? Thank you for coming tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. We do have one more light. Councilor Cordova.
I also want to thank you. But just a question, too, on the events you listed in here, the Marathon in Monroe. How did that go?
That's actually the one of our LTAC applications.
Oh, okay.
So that will be next year. It'll be next spring.
It'll be next spring.
Yes.
Okay. I see that. The Hoedown was October 21st. And how did that go? What was the final result of that?
Considering some of the setbacks that we had, one being the weather, and the other being a late start trying to get that with everything else we had going on, it was fine. It was a great event. It wasn't hugely attended. And I think part of that, too, was that it was not downtown. It was down at the Oxford Lodge. And so there was a little disconnect there. But the weather was horrible that day.
And it was not surprising enough.
We have everything from our lessons learned ready to go for next year. Absolutely. So.
Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next we'll move into comments from citizens. This is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe except a quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. The sign-in sheet was up front, and looks like we have a few names. First to speak is Mr. Ted Jackson. Come up to the podium and state your name and address for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Ted Jackson, and I've been a figure in the valley since about 2002, and I was also a intern under Deborah Knight, so I have to do her proud here. I served with the City of Salton from 2009, I believe it was, through about 2014. We were focused on outdoor recreation tourism. And I don't know if you heard the Park to Pass. Remember that initiative we tried to go for? And anyway, the Department of Commerce said we had a great economic development plan, but they just weren't going to give us that initiative credit. So, turned out that's okay because they didn't have any money to offer anyway. It sounds like the program's going away. But under my time there, Deborah talked to me and introduced me to the Washington State Legislature. And being an electrician of several years, we got this WAEV ordinance with the assistance of Linda over here, passed to the Washington State Legislature. Our focus was on the economic contributions that we got off the NOVAC site,
And there was about 14 economic studies that were done there. They range from $4 million a year to $4 billion a year statewide in Arizona. Since I had the time of training from Deborah Knight on local governments, I've also gone on to serve with the Big Tent organization, which works with the governor's office, works with RCO and the grants, and we advocate for outdoor recreation. A study came up that our outdoor recreation economy in the state of Washington is roughly $21 billion a year. And we could greatly enhance that if we were to focus a little more. So that's what we do with that. So far, 17 counties statewide have adopted their ordinances. Coming up is Stone County's ordinance, Pierce County's ordinance, and also Calhoun's ordinance in Lewis County. So those will be coming up this January. I'm here to encourage you to let your citizens have the opportunity to use their vehicles as a means of transportation and getting around. They're a lot less, they have a lower carbon print for starters, but that's also much cheaper than firing up your diesel rig. And with that, I'm going to turn over to the next person. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. I've worked with a lot of counties and cities. For instance, like Natchez, 30,000. I believe your city's 15,000. When Natchez had this up for a year, no incidences. And Carolyn, on her way to Hawaii tonight, asked me to let you know that she's thinking of you and that they've had no incidences in the city of Salem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
No question.
Yes.
The piece of paper you just showed of the counties and of the economic values, do we have a copy of that?
No, would you like a copy?
Would you get them to Elizabeth over there and
sure.
Get them
to I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have Linda Driscoll. State your name and address for the record.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Linda Driscoll. My husband Randy and I own Premier Polaris. We're the state's largest stocking Polaris dealer, and we're located at 122 Charles Street here in Monroe. I'm also a member of the statewide collaborative consisting of ORV riders, sportsmen, environmentalists, law enforcement, rural city managers, and land resource managers that worked to pass ESHB 1632 in 2013. I'm here today in support of the WATV ordinance on behalf of our customers who number in the thousands. WATVs are adult-size, all-terrain vehicles, ATVs, or utility terrain vehicles, side-by-side, that have been modified with safety equipment and subjected to a dealer inspection certifying that the vehicle meets the equipment requirements. The WATV operator must be a licensed driver, meaning 16 and up, must file a release exempting the state and all counties and cities with WATV ordinances from any and all liability. They must display a metal identification tag or license plate. The process actually changes the title of the vehicle, and it's not done without expense and effort. By definition, WATVs cannot be dune buggies, go-karts, or youth vehicles of any type, nor are they unmodified ATVs or side-by-sides. The intent behind ESHB 1632 was to generate recreation-based revenue from Washington's rural communities by building routes that connect existing off-road riding areas, like the Reeder Foothills, through a system of roads and trails. We're inching closer to a Snohomish County ordinance. Our hope would be to access this route from Monroe eventually. But with or without this route, a WATV ordinance in Monroe would allow more use for WATVs and would generate more revenue for many small businesses, including my own. As we worked with city councils on their ordinance, we found concerns come primarily in two areas. The first is dislike and distrust of ATVs and the people who ride them. I'd like to illustrate a little bias of my own. I don't like Subarus. But my personal dislike for them doesn't mean I can come to you and ask you to restrict them from public roads. And it's the same with the WATV. Your own personal opinion really doesn't matter. The state says they're legal. The second issue primarily raised is safety. I would remind you that as the operator, the risk is my own, just like in my Jeep. And I've already signed a waiver exempting the city, the county, and the state from liability. But if safety is such an issue, I admit going through time, I become more and more concerned why a bicycle is allowed access to public roads and my WATV is not. Doesn't make sense to me. So, in closing, you have local businesses like mine that would benefit, citizens who would like to put a street legal vehicle of their choice on their public roads. I ask that you move forward. Thank you.
Question.
Thank you.
Mr. Scarborough.
I heard you mentioned a bunch of things. One I didn't hear, you said 18 or licensed driver, 16 and up. I didn't hear you say anything about insurance. Do they have to have insurance like a motor vehicle?
They do not, and that is because a motorcycle does not. So the concept was, if a motorcycle, I'm talking a Harley, doesn't have to have insurance, why should a WATV? And that was lobbied pretty extensively by one of the clubs here in the state. Most people, though, do have insurance. I personally have insurance on mine. It's just a good policy.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Campbell, I'll just second with the council. If I can just remind you that the public comment, hold the questions for later in the discussion, if possible. Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you. Well, if you don't mind, I just got a question because you made a couple of comments.
Oh, would you want me back up there?
Would you please?
Exactly.
And I understand that it's public comment. I don't normally do this, but I'm just curious. You said 16 was the minimum age?
You have to be a licensed driver. There are actually an existing law in the books. It's known as the Hinkle Bill. So 1632 could not remove something that was already an ORV access. That is used on the eastern side of the state. And it allows family members, you could really load up little kids on a youth quad, take them under supervision down public roads from your house, down past the city limits into that ORV park. That's what that's designed for. It doesn't really apply with a WATV ordinance. So two parts. It's important to keep that clear.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you. Next we have Todd Strickler. Strickler, if you can state your name and address for the record as well.
Good evening. My name is Todd Strickler. My address is 12630 266 Avenue Southeast in Monroe. Mine's going to be real short. Linda went over it, and basically I think last time we spoke about, or you spoke about this, there was some confusion on licensed drivers, and I brought in a copy of RCW 4609.444, which states that you must be 16 years old and have a valid California or a valid Washington license in order to operate WATV, or have a license from the state in which you reside if you're a visitor. I brought a copy of that in to give to you, and basically that's all I have to say this evening.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Right, next we have Patrick Daniels. Daniels, you can see your name and address for the record as well.
My name is Patrick Daniels. I live at 14883 Jake Drive in Monroe. I've been a resident for 20 years, a little over 20 years. I am an off-road enthusiast. I've had various Jeeps, Broncos, and a couple of what are called here WATVs. I currently have a quad that I purchased here at Polaris a few months ago. I'm not going to go through some of the things because I think some of the people here before spoke on some of the same issues that I was going to talk about after I was here at the last meeting. I got here late, so I wasn't able to answer the comments. When this legislation was first being drafted and I heard about it, I attended several of the committee meetings, and I saw where they addressed a lot of the same issues that you raised last time. And I think some of them, you can see where some of the other communities have addressed those. I think one of the ones was, you know, using WATVs on Highway 2. Cities of Wenatchee and East Wenatchee forbid use on Highway 2 and Highways 97. So that's been addressed. Again, the age, the driver's licenses, City of Cleon in their municipal code on WATVs specified no unlicensed drivers, no one under 16. And I'd just like to add, I spend a lot of time in Cleon because my mother lives there, and there is a lot of usage of WATVs. I've never seen anybody abuse that. They drive like the rest of the people. It surprised me at first when I saw people driving them up and down the streets, but now it's commonplace there. And even my mom comments on it, because when I go to visit her, she said, did you bring yours? And I say, I don't come here to ride. I'm over in the L.T. Murray Wilderness Area riding, or you know, Reeder or Walker Valley. So I think here in Monroe, it's not a situation where people will come here to ride, but for the residents that do have quad or a side-by-side like myself, accessing service, fuel stations, being able to just drive there instead of having to load it into the back of my truck or trailer it to get to these places will be a convenience. There was comments about, you know, fun and cool riding them. Yeah, for the occasional summer errand, it would be fun. I have a Jeep. It doesn't have a top on it. It's fun to ride in the summertime. I see a guy cruising town in an old Myers Manx dune buggy. It would not meet any of the NHTSA requirements for a street legal vehicle today. But, you know, at the time it was produced, it was perfectly legal, and he's still driving it here in town in the summertime. It's cool and it's fun. So, I mean, there are vehicles on the street for that reason. It's not the only reason why I have mine, but at the same time, it would be fun to have that option in the summer. And again, it's not something that we would be abusing, but just as an option for driving around town on occasion. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we have Austin Bennett.
Austin Pinch, 221-6 99th Street, Southeast. Pretty much everyone's touched on kind of what I was going to talk about. I was reviewing the police chief's answers, his response to some of the questions that came up last time. I think those have pretty much been answered. One of the things that I kind of wanted to address, which was an issue that was brought about city parks and destroying city parks and stuff like that, I don't see that being an issue. Why that would be brought up, I think we already have enough of an issue with our homeless and vagrant problem destroying some of the parks that we have in the city. I don't think those of us that have side-by-sides feel the need to go drive through a city park and destroy public property rather than just, hey, we want to go run to the tire shop or go run to the local dealership or, you know, the part that I kind of do agree with, that it's cool and fun. It's an ability for my wife and I to go during the summer, go drive into town. Without having a motorcycle, she's not comfortable on a motorcycle. This is the closest I get to have to riding with my wife on a motorcycle. As it is, you know, like stated previously, on top of the cost of the side-by-side, you know, we spend money at the local dealerships, Pierre Polaris or Adventure Motorsports, to spend between $300 to $600 on the kits to make them street legal, and then pay the fees to do so in the registration. Mine's already registered street legal. I'd like to just be able to legally drive it in town. Other than that, I think everything else has been kind of touched on so far today.
Thank you,
Doug. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is all that we have signed up for this evening. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to come forward and speak to the council? Next, we have the consent agenda. Councilmember Cutterback.
Could I pull number 4, 5, and 6?
Items 4, 5, and 6. Okay. Is there a motion to
the consent?
So moved.
Second. Motion to approve consent items 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9 is made by Councilmember Gamble, seconded by Councilmember Scarborough. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Great. Consent item number 4, authorize mayor to sign addendum number 2 to consult agreement with Green Light Strategies for State Lobby's Public Affairs Representative, Ms. Knight.
Yes. So the issue in front of council this evening is to authorize the mayor to sign addendum number 2 with Green Light Strategies, who is our government liaison specialist. We contracted with Green Light Strategies 2 years ago. The contract includes 2 one-year extensions. The first year extension was for 2017. It expires at the end of this month, at the end of December, and the second extension then would be good from January 1 through December of 2018. I think the staff would be interested in coming back to council probably mid-year next year with a proposal to issue another RFP, then going back out into the marketplace to see about other government relations specialists who might be interested in the contract. I think overall, from my perspective, both Brian Wall and Chad Menick have been doing an excellent job for us. I've been really impressed that Brian has been attending a number of meetings kind of outside of the legislative session and then following up with our elected representatives both at the county and at the state. And so I would recommend that we continue to move forward and approve this contract extension.
Council, any discussion? Councilmember Carter.
Yeah, I just had a couple of questions about it. So, was there an increase in the cost?
No.
Okay, that was one of my questions. And then, just going off what you said about possibly looking at doing, because this is a shorter session, which would be one of the alternatives was to approve it through June. And that's what you just mentioned. So, but if we approve this contract as was written, it would go to the end of next year, correct?
It would. There's a 10-day notice. So if the council wanted to take a look at going out for an RFP in June, at that point you would give your 10 days notice.
Okay.
But I think that would probably...
So you're saying that's something we would look at as we get closer to it.
Exactly. All right. That would just give you more flexibility as opposed to doing just a 6-month contract and then having to come back and do a second extension.
Okay. But there's no fee increase?
No fee increase.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to approve the mayor to sign addendum number 2 to the consultant agreement with Green Light Strategies Incorporated for State Lobbyist Public Affairs Representative Services and expressly authorize any further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Motion made by Councilmember Cutterback with a second made by Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. And then item number 5. Authorize the mayor to sign consult agreement with Stowe Development and Strategies for North Kelsey Property Marketing, Sales, and Service.
Yep, thank you. So the issue in front of council on this proposed contract is to hire a consultant to assist us with packaging and marketing the North Kelsey properties. So Mr. Bob Stowe is formerly the city manager for Mill Creek and the city manager for the city of Bothell. And while he was at Mill Creek, he's part of the team that put together the Mill Creek Town Center, and then he went over to the city of Bothell, and while he was with Bothell, he's the person that was responsible for transforming Bothell's downtown into what you see today. So if you've been to Bothell any time in the last 6 months to a year, you can have seen the major transformation that's taken place. So the purpose of this contract really is to assist me
and Ben Swanson, our community development director, with working with the brokers to actually package up the North Kelsey properties in a way that's going to attract a developer to come in and purchase all of the properties. So past several years, what we've been seeing are proposals to purchase individual properties, but nothing that's really come forward with an entire package. And that's what I'm hoping we're going to get with Mr. Stowe. So the way that the contract is organized is it's got two pieces. It has a fee-for-service piece, which is low. So, for example, the first phase of that fee-for-service is just $7,500. And then there's a second phase that is also $7,500 that would be paid out at the point where we actually issue out an RFP for a development, and then a third and final phase that we would pay out. What it does include, though, is an incentive piece that pays Mr. Stowe if and when the properties are actually purchased. So there's no additional payout. So it's a percentage of the overall sales. And the purpose for that is really to provide some incentive, some additional incentive for Mr. Stowe to actually work hard to sell those properties as opposed to just helping them market them. And kind of calculating out the total cost, it's just not that much money in the scheme of things if we're actually able to close the deal. Because my biggest concern really is that North Kelsey debt payment that we have in 2020. So we have another big payment. It's over $2 million. And so we really need to be focused in on the next 2 years trying to get these properties sold. And I think this is a slightly different approach, but it brings in the expertise that Mr. Stowe has.
So I appreciate that. And I'm just trying to figure out, so is he acting as a broker?
No.
Okay, so he's working with a broker.
He's working with the city.
Right.
And the broker that the city ultimately retains. Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And so does this, his fee will be on top of what we probably pay to a broker.
That's right.
And so, but he will be working with the city, but also probably with the broker once we have
Yes, and my hope is that because I don't have any experience really in working with brokers to sell property, I've purchased a lot of property in my days.
Right.
But this is the first piece of property that I've actually had to market and sell. And Mr. Swanson doesn't have that experience either. Mr. Stowe does.
Right.
And so I'm really hoping that his track record and his relationships is really what we're purchasing, right? He knows the brokers, he knows the broker community, and he can help us craft these deals in a way that we're going to have our best advantage. Because even though the broker is working for us, it's still been my experience that at the end of the day, they really want to make a sale. And oftentimes, they're not looking out for the best interests of the city completely. And that's really why I want to have a second expert on staff that we can call on to review these property proposals and make sure that we're getting the best deal possible.
So when we go through, I know there was a request for a proposal for the brokers.
Yes.
And so that is coming in, I think I saw November 17th, or that was the end. Did we get some?
We did not.
Proposals, so
no.
We have not received any from any
brokers. We did not. Right. And so that's the other thing that now I would like to work with Mr. Stowe on, presuming that you approve this contract tonight, is to reach back out to the brokers that I previously contacted and find out what really happened.
Right.
And then to try and figure out what are we going to do to either go back to those same brokers or to reach out to a different group of brokers.
Okay. And when we do get proposals for brokers, the time that we handled it before was we had interviews and they came before council, and I would assume is that the process you're looking at coming up?
That's what I'd be hoping.
Okay. 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 Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Councilmember Scarborough.
So the fee is delineated in this piece in your package that could possibly be over the next 2 years. 2 years and 2 months. Before 2020, we're trying to achieve something so we don't have a big hit in 2020.
Yes.
And where does this dollar figure come out of the budget?
So for Mr. Stowe? So for his flat fee, we actually have money set aside in the North Kelsey Fund. So we have about $25,000 that's in that fund. And then the piece that's on top at the sale would be coming out of the proceeds of sale.
Thanks. Councilmember Gamble.
No, I appreciate you pulling this item.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think And great questions, great discussion. You know, I think this, there's a big time benefit for this. I mean, obviously, we learned, you know, through our last broker that understanding that it was not being marketed in any way, shape, or form, as far as I'm concerned, and not the way that it should have been. So I think it's the right, it's a prudent way to go after, you know, someone, an expert, you know, that, hey, to market the property the right way, with kind of the thoughts we've had, you know, all along. And two successful examples, and then we're pretty near past, so I think this is, good. It'll be money well spent, so I would make a motion. Once I throw up there, authorize the mayor to sign the consultant agreement with Stowe Development and Strategies for North Kelsey Property Marketing and Sales Services, and expressly authorize any further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
A motion made by Councilmember Campbell and a second made by Councilmember Kovac. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. All right. And item number 6, authorized mayor to sign agreement with Mayor Girozano, Monroe Municipal Judge. Mr. Warden.
Did you have a question, Councilmember, that you just wanted to get into?
I'm trying to find out where it was. Oh, so my question was, so this the current contract has been for 3 years, or
it was the unexpired 4-year term, if you remember correctly.
Yeah.
We stopped with working with the district court and started our own, but when we signed the first one, it had to be for the unexpired term of 4 years.
Oh, of 4 years.
Yeah.
So, really,
so
was
now
about
we're
3 years.
Three and four.
Okay.
I think it was three, a little over three, and then now this will be for 4 years. And,
okay.
And from now on, it'll be 4 years.
Okay. So when I read the cover page,
yes.
It said during the term of this 4-year contract, the city will conduct a strategic analysis of the court to evaluate the current operations, anticipate future needs, and develop strategies and objectives that support the court's operation and mission. Was that done for the current 3 years?
It was not.
Okay, and why not?
That's a good question. It's pretty new. I mean, for the most of us, this was new for the city, so it's really about making sure we got operational efficiency on the basics. And I know the judges talked about creating community courts and stuff like that, but I think for the first unexpired term, it's really about making sure we could get through a court session. We've added court calendars, we've added days of infractions, as well as doing criminals on different days, criminal infractions on different days. So for the next 4 years, we're going to look at more holistically where are we going in the future.
Okay. And when I saw here too, it says the contract proposed reflects the most cost-effective option for the city.
Correct.
And we're, for me as a council member, a cost-effective option is obviously important, but also is quality and work relationships with the city. And I didn't see anything in here that related to really how it is going, if that makes sense. So how is it going?
I think we provide a good service to our, you know, people that have to come here. They would have either had to go to Everett or possibly over by the district court. So we're usually pretty crowded, Pam, right? So we've added court days. I think it's going well. I think that three of them do a really good job. So.
Okay. I just was trying to look at kind of what is the kind of criteria as we review this and sign a new contract.
Sure.
What goals has it met and whatnot. So I recognize that it's a cost-effective solution, but that's why it's helpful for me to see a little bit more of, you know, what are some other metrics we're tracking to know that it's being successful.
Okay.
And so that's helpful. So I appreciate that the next 4 years, it looks like you're going to look evaluate the current operations and all of that and look where it's going. So
great.
I'll look forward to seeing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Scarborough.
And the increase from 48 to 5280, why?
Well, for one, this is a contract, so the city's not paying any benefits, any Social Security taxes. The contractor is responsible for all that. So as the, you know, as wages and benefits increase, we thought it was commensurate to increase the
the pay of this person who's responsible for the salary and getting the judge is responsible for getting her own health benefits and she doesn't have some today. So that's what we felt was most appropriate.
So that's a monthly increase?
That's correct.
I would add that we did take a look at comparables. So we, Ben, I can't recall which comparables we reviewed, but there were multiple cities.
Yeah. Black Diamond, Enumclaw, Lake Forest Park, Flying Lake, and Bothell. And they kind of run from a few tickets per week to, you know, Bothell does a considerable amount. But Lake Forest Park has photo enforcement, so they obviously do a lot of infractions. We did look at comparables for within the market for the other judges. And it's really a mix, you know, it's probably six and one half dozen of the other, those that have brought their judges in as full as employees or those that have kept them out kept them on as contractors.
And we have this in the budget?
That's correct. It's in the proposed budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Kubik.
So, thanks for answering my question.
Sure.
So I'll make a motion. Move to authorize the mayor to sign the municipal court or judge contract with Mara Rosano and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay. Motion from Councilmember Kubik, second from Councilmember Hanford. Do show a light on Councilmember Campbell.
Yeah, I was just pleasant when you were talking about the raise. I mean, essentially, it's 10%
correct.
Raise spread across 4 years to the life of the contract, correct?
No, it's 10, no, it's not. It's not
so spread. Per month, but it's going from 2018 until.
And that's for 2018, and then it goes up again in 2019.
And it'll go up again in 2019.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just a 10%, it's a straight 10%.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
We got a motion on the floor for this. First and a second, so any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Liz.
Yes, thank you. Approved through the consent agenda vote is ordinance number 027-2017, approving the final plat for the Curry Farm subdivision, ST-2017-02, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time in the same time to come effective. Also, we did confirm the appointment of Mara De Rosano as the municipal court judge, and I will now administer her oath. I will go ahead and administer the oath, and you may choose to swear or affirm when I finish. Okay, there you go. Mara J. Rosano, you do hereby solemnly swear that you will, to the best of your ability, perform the duties of the Office of Municipal Court Judge as provided in RCW Chapter 3.50 and your appointment by the Mayor, and will support the Constitution and laws of the State of Washington and the ordinances of the City of Monroe.
I swear.
On the unfinished business, discussion of the WATV code regulations. Spencer.
This is the Senate House Bill 1632, which gives the city the option to approve or prohibit the WATV use on public roadways where the speed limit is 35 miles an hour or less. And I'm responding to some questions that were raised at the last discussion on this matter, which was our public chat by the Mayor Chuckley. The first question was, councilperson wanted a map of where the WATVs are allowed in the city for the RCW. Instead of a map, which would exclude a very small area, it's easier to follow the guidance of the RCW. And the RCW indicates that they could be allowed anywhere within the city limits, where the speed limit is 35 miles per hour or less. And second question was, is there going to be any increase in the WCIA premiums? There would be no increase in premiums. Premiums are usually increased because of claim history or because of the inflation. The next question was, what types of WATVs apply to the RCW. In the packet that you received, there's some pictures and descriptions of the type of WATVs. You will also notice that any WATV that has been equipped with the required equipment per RCW is allowed. And the next question was, how do they compare to motorcycles? And riders of motorcycles must have a motorcycle driver's license and are tested prior to receiving one. There's no specific driver's license required for a WATV. Motorcycles are street legal, come from the factory with signals, brake lights, mirrors, and federal DOT legal tires. WATVs do not come from the factory so equipped. Next question was, accident data reference WATVs, small cars, motorcycles, and trucks. We were unable to come up with data on motorcycles or trucks, but we have had numerous accidents in the city of Monroe between small cars and dump trucks with pup trailers, primarily in the roundabouts. Next question was feedback from the cities that have passed the WATV ordinance, accident and enforcement data, and has Kirkland passed the WATV ordinance? In contacting cities and towns that have passed the ordinance, they have all said that the ordinances are too new to build a legitimate data. Remember, the towns in Snohomish County have populations about one-third of what Manila is. The towns in Eastern Washington are farming communities, and they do not have the traffic issues we have. In the recent election, one of the candidates said he wanted to pass an ordinance so that WATVs could be used everywhere east of Highway 9. And my question was to him was, why? Could it be because of traffic issues west of Highway 9 that are similar to Monroe's? And he agreed that yes. And lastly, I was told by the Kirkland Police Department they have not passed the WATV ordinance. What limitations can the city enact? Minimum age, specific streets, supervision requirements, you can add all of these. A minimum age and driver's license also would be secondary enforcement requirements. In other words, the driver would need to be contacted for some other violation before the minimum age or driver's license violation could be enforced. Currently, we are having a tough time keeping up with the motor vehicle enforcement in the city. The officers are. And this would just add to the issues we have. I want you to remember that last week we gave a report on collisions in the city. And if you look closely at the report, we've spiked in the last couple of months. And the question was asked, why is the ordinance needed? And what benefit is there to the city to allow this? From the previous discussion, the public says because it would be fun and because it would look cool, and that, which is a similar statement made when the jet skis many years ago asked to use Lake Tahoe. The same logic was used on it. But the benefit of the city, according to the public also that testified, is that they would fuel the WATVs in Monroe, eat in Monroe, and stay at our hotels. The city already captures these benefits, as there are not many eating establishments, hotels, or gas stations in areas that are currently, they are currently able to operate in.
Councilor Kemp.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief, for coming in. There are two questions that came up from the comments. I just want to make sure it's clear. So there is a minimum requirement age of 16?
No. There is a... To operate it, there is a driver's license requirement.
Okay.
And if an individual is under direct supervision, 4609.310 subsection 4 says that a supervising adult must be in a position or another wheeled all terrain vehicle, specifically off highway vehicle or motorbike, or if on the ground within a reasonable distance of the unlicensed operator, provide close support, assistance, or directions to the unlicensed operator.
So there's no minimum age for the unlicensed operator?
No, I haven't seen one.
The other question, again, we heard is insurance. So there's no, I used to ride a motorcycle and I believe I have liability insurance in case I ran somebody over. I don't know if that's a requirement for motorcycles, but.
Individuals, correct. Motorcycles are required in the state of Washington to have liability insurance.
Okay, so there are, so in the comparison to motorcycles, if you're going to look at insurance, the motorcycles are required to have insurance. Yes? No?
Not in the state of Washington.
Really?
No. That was, came into agreement many years ago when the health law came in, and it was kind of a trade-off with the motorcycle industry at that time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Carback.
So I have a question about the license, just a Washington license. So I thought I saw in your, what you just read, where it says no license is necessary. But I heard from the audience that you have to have a valid driver's license.
Now, what you're looking at is when I'm speaking about comparing motorcycles licenses.
Oh.
I said no specific driver's license, such as a motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
License.
So what I read here was no driver's license required for a WATV.
Yes,
but you mean no specific, like
no
special.
Specific. Correct.
Okay. But they are required to have a driver's license. Either a Washington one or one that's valid in their
yes.
state.
Yes.
Okay. And so then I'm trying to figure out, so I saw some city had up the requirement, said you had to be 21. So
you can make any age requirement that you want according to what I can.
Even though they have a valid driver's license, which is valid at 16, we can say that's not enough, you have to be 21. And how do we enforce that?
Again, it's a secondary violation. In other words, they have to commit some other type of traffic violation for a rejected driver's license.
Okay. And I appreciate we have people in the audience. I wasn't here when this first issue came up, when it was on, I think it came up on council, I'm not sure when it was. And I'm just curious, have you gotten feedback from residents, city residents? Because I understand some of you might be, but some are not city residents. Has there been talk in the community or feedback that city residents are open to this or want this? Have you heard that, Chief?
The last meeting, there were quite a few city residents in attendance that report, yes.
That report, okay. Okay. That's all my questions right now.
Councilmember Scarborough.
I would suggest that if we're going to consider anything under 18, that we get the school district involved in the situation, because if people are of the opinion that they can drive them on the streets that are 35 miles an hour or less, they're going to want to drive them to school. And if that's going to be the case, then we need to have the school district's input to driving and parking them into high school. Just a thought.
Okay. Thank you. Councilor Gamble.
The piece I look at where we talked about the cities that have moved to it, that it's too new, that we don't have enough data to see if it's been successful or not. East Wenatchee moved basically immediately after it went in 2013, so they've been around for 4 years almost, correct? Look at that. I guess that's the piece that I would be the most, that I'm questioning, that 4 years of data is not, enough time for us to draw some sort of, data from, hey, is this successful or not? I mean, you and I have talked about this, offline, so you kind of know where, I'm at. I'm very much interested in having the discussion around, around this. I have a hard, if it's a licensed driver, and your, it's, you know, the vehicle meets specifications for driving on a road, it's 35 miles or less, we can put something in place. We don't feel like we want them driving up and down, you know, the Highway 2 corridor, but you put something in place where you can go over it, you know, and cross. I just have a hard time understanding why it is that much different than a motorcycle. You know, I ride. Yeah, I mean, and the one thing I will say is, even on a, you know, on motorcycles ride today, I mean, I could buy a, an aftermarket kit to make, you know, a dual sport a motorcycle out and, you know, ride that all over the place. So I get what you're saying as far as a, you know, there's no motorcycle endorsement. So, you know, I get that, and I remember having to go to motorcycle school, and, you know, and that type of stuff.
And you passed?
I did. About it.
Barely.
It's okay. There was the Oregon Duck was the teacher, so. I'm trying to see. I mean, the comparative safety issue. If it's a licensed citizen and it's a legal vehicle, it's a state law. I'm just failing to see why we wouldn't at least take a look at this. You know, full disclosure, you know, hey, I have a side-by-side. And yes, I would, I have a desire, because, you know, in some instances, I've not had a car or vehicles in the shop or something. I need to run down to the grocery store, and it would have been nice. And I had to have to wait. I mean, it was a convenience thing, but I would like to take a look at this. What makes sense? I very much value your input and opinion on this, Chief. From a safety, you know, perspective, it's just I'm just equating this to a motorcycle, and you have irresponsible motorcycle drivers, and you have a lot of very responsible motorcycle drivers like yourself. I would be very much interested in pursuing this. You know, we have a motto here: the adventure starts here. And this is outdoor motorsports, and we have a very big, you know, even over at the fairgrounds, outdoor motorsports. We have some businesses in town. I think this is a good thing to look at. Thanks.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I would say I'm probably in the same camp that you're in, Councilmember Gamble. I struggle with the fact that, and maybe I'm just the only one realizing this, that I pay for car insurance, and motorcycle drivers don't have to pay for insurance to cover my vehicle if they crash into it. So is there some sort of way to, if we were to pursue this, make it so that if they're out driving on the roads, they have to have insurance, liability insurance?
CL and PD.
It's extremely irritating to just find that out. So now you throw in the mix of, oh, let's also throw in WATVs, and they don't have to pay insurance, and if they wreck my car, then I'm the one stuck with the bill, unless I misunderstood.
I'm not sure if you can do that, require insurance for WATVs, but I truly believe that the same amount of motorcycle officers and, motorcycle operators and WATV operators, probably the same percentage have insurance on the vehicles. I think motorcycle operators, you're probably between 85% and 90%, and then sure, WATV is the same.
What's up? Councilmember Campbell.
I would just add to that just because it's required on the vehicle side doesn't mean they have it for cars. I mean, there's a percentage of the population, and that's why we have uninsured motorists and protection. And I would echo the chief's the comments around that 85-90% would. I sound like a commercial for Safeco. My wife works there, so full disclosure. That's why we have That's why you have an insured motorist.
Did you have anything else you need to disclose?
No.
Thank you for easing me my pain a little bit. Thanks.
Councilmember Scarborough.
To counter your comment, however, if I drive around without insurance in my car, I can be ticketed. If you're driving around without insurance on your motorcycle, I'm going to be. You're not going to be ticketed. So there's some more validity to Mr. Hanford's concern to me.
Second. I'd just like to add an email on the next slide. Looking at this, kind of really feeling indifferent. It's, you know, the safety factor and everything like that. I'm one of those cyclists that are all over town, including Highway 2, and still here so far. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested and eager to continue this discussion because I think there are good points to it. The thing that I think works to our favor in doing something new like this is that, you know, we can really set the standard and regulate as much or as little as we want, if that's the direction or the council wants to go, whether the certain areas of the city, side by sides, or where they're seated on the traditional quad, one in front of the other. So I think there's a lot of opportunities here for us to look at and certainly be interested in having a future discussion. Councilmember Scarborough.
I want to point out, and there's a certain faction in the audience that can confirm this. There's responsible four-wheel drive drivers and there's irresponsible four-wheel drive drivers, and they come in all ways, shapes, and forms. And I'll remind you that that person in the audience of the bus accident we had on the entrance to high school, one bus rearing and another because a Bronco and four-wheel drive raced across the grass, over the curves in front of the bus, slammed on its brakes, but the bus behind it couldn't make it in time. So that sticks in my mind when I think of the irresponsible drivers. And that's why I say I think the high school needs to have at least an opportunity to think about it if we're going to allow a 16-year-old to drive one of the high school.
So the question that we have for council, unless there's anything else you want to add, this was a discussion and direction for staff, and so if as council we want to direct staff to bring this back as a draft ordinance, or send this to the public safety or the P4 committee for more discussion.
And look at what are there any requirements or like the minimum age? Are we gonna? Is there anything that we should put on that?
Committee for recommendations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Recommendations on the ordinance. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to new business. AB 17-118, ordinance number 028, submitting adopting 2018 budget for streaming. Ms. Passer.
So basically, I think you've heard enough from me already about the budget, so I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Sorry, Councilmember Hanford.
No questions, but thank you very much for all the hard work that you and all the staff have done on putting this together. So I'm going to move to accept this first reading. Ordinance number 028-2017, adopting budget for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2018.
First from Councilmember Hanford. Second. Second from Councilmember Scarborough. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll be from me one more time on the 5th.
Next we have new business AB 17-189, ordinance number 029-2017, amending the Phoenix D transportation plan of the 2013-35 general comprehensive plan, first reading. Mr. Swanson.
Great. Thank you, Council. So for the legal statements have been here, there's been lots of discussion about the Kelsey Blueberry intersection and improvements that are needed associated with it. So what we did is we added it to the CIP that's in Appendix C of the comp plan. And so what that does is it makes it eligible for additional funding if needed. And so with this, because we're adopting what's technically out of cycle for the comprehensive plan, there is an allowance that you can go with the budget amendment. And so that's the way I believe we're going to forward from now on is all capital facilities amendments are going to go with the budget, just so you have that larger overview when reviewing the budget. So with that, staff would request that you move to accept first reading ordinance number 029-2017.
Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. With that, I will move to accept as first reading ordinance number 029/2017, amending and updating Appendix D transportation plan by incorporating the Kelsey Blueberry intersection improvements, providing for severability and establishing the effective date.
Second.
Second.
That was the second.
Motion made by Councilmember Kemp and then seconded by Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. Motion passes. Thank you. All right. Final action. AB 17-190. Approval of 2018 council meeting schedule, Ms. Knight.
Thank you. This is just really a housekeeping item, and the purpose of the bill is just to set the council agenda meeting schedule for 2018 so we can let council know, city staff know, members of the public know what meetings you intend to cancel potentially, and then what your special meeting dates might be. This doesn't preclude the council's ability to make changes in the future, so you're certainly welcome as we move along through the year to update the calendar.
Councilmember Davis.
Sure, I appreciate that. Thank you for that. Just a look ahead. So I'll move to approve the 2018 council meeting schedule as proposed, including all regular business study sessions, meetings presented at the council, and potential cancellations as officially canceled.
Second.
Motion made by Councilmember Davis with a second made by Councilmember Kedbeck. Any discussion on this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you. Councilmember reports there's no P4 committee meeting. And so we'll just go down to individual reports. I have nothing other than to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.
Just the one that, you know, this last weekend, our beloved Bearcats, their run at state ended, but it was just, I'd be remiss not to say how fun that was, and to see just the community support, all the signs. It was just a great season, and I think the coaches and the boys that we had this year, it was just a blast. And I didn't get to make it to the game. I had to go to Eastern Washington, but both my kids made it, and I was able to stream the whole thing on YouTube because somebody posted on social media, one of the social media sites, and they got over 100 subscribers, so they had a live stream going from the game. So it was great. Gonna miss Friday and Saturday night football, but I know Coach Pompous will have them ready to go in 2018. So happy Thanksgiving.
Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. Nothing really to report. Happy Thanksgiving. I will not be here December 5th. That's it for me.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing but happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Councilmember Hamford.
Thank you. It was
spirit of Thanksgiving. I'm thankful that I'm serving with all of you up here, and sort of privilege and again excited that Deborah's with us now. Staff, appreciate all you do. Happy Thanksgiving.
Councilmember Kovac.
Hello. Hey, Deborah. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for all your hard work.
Do again. Do a question. How many seniors do we have on our football team?
Quite a few.
Yeah, it's a really good senior class.
So we have some really strong underclassmen too in key positions. We got a feeder program that the middle school is turning them out. Beginning.
So we can expect a life performance next year.
Well, maybe a speed bump, but short again.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Thank you. Staff and department reports. Start with our community development update, Mr. Swanson.
Thank you. So in addition to the information you have in your packet, the standard monthly report, last week I had a meeting with, actually it was a group meeting with the Snohomish Valley Transportation. And what that is they started in the North Bend area with a grant from King County Department of Transportation or King County Transit to serve the buses that didn't quite go into those urban areas. And so basically you have the commuter buses taking people in from North Bend and Snoqualmie straight into Issaquah and Seattle. And so a lady named Amy Big started this nonprofit and started receiving funding and slowly worked her way down. She's in Duval currently, and the bus, several buses run on fixed routes, what's called a fixed deviated route, where they run a spine like 202 or 203 and then loop through neighborhoods to pick up individuals. And so she's always seen a need, and several years ago she ran the service up to Monroe. And so she's been working with King County to try to get additional funding to bring a bus from Duval to Monroe. Right now, if you were to take public transit from Duval to Monroe, it'd take you 3.5 hours because you have to go to Seattle, you have to go to Everett, you have to come back around. Why King County is listening to her and they're actually proposing to fund a bus starting in 2018 is because they see that need of the Carnation and Duval residents to get up here. Kidney dialysis is a real big one for Monroe that a lot of the underserved need. And the bus, it used to cost $1, maybe a little more than that now. It's very, very cheap transportation for these people, but not to mention the big box stores that are located up here for shopping. Because Carnation Duval really don't have a ton of shopping options down there. And so what they're proposing in 2018 is they're going to do basically what's called an on-call service. So you call approximately a day ahead of time, and the bus will pick you up and take you to your kidney dialysis or shopping, and then loop back around and bring you back down to your home. In addition to that, in 2019, they're going to add an additional bus to that route. So they'll have two buses running a Carnation Duval to Monroe route. And I talked to Amy potentially about taking one of those buses and turning it into a fixed route deviated, so it would have something, you know, coming through on the spine and then deviate through the neighborhoods. She can do that to a point, but because the funding is coming from King County, she has to focus a lot of that on bringing King County residents to Monroe to do the shopping as opposed to going through a lot of Monroe neighborhoods. But in 2018, we're going to work on that, see if we can't get a little more deviation to run through the neighborhoods. We know that we have a lot of needs, especially if you, you know, you look over in the Frylands area, and Highway 2 separates a lot of those residents from the needs they have. I remember former Mayor Zimmerman used to tell a story about his wife picking up a lady that lived in his neighborhood, in the Frylands neighborhood, and she was literally walking to a shop. And so that need's been here for a long time, and it's something that that we focused on. And even when I left here, you know, I talked to Amy Biggs about that need here. So happy to say that's coming. It's going to be start of 2018. She's also hired a bus driver, some other things. So I want to say it's going to start January 1st, 2018. We'll be coming shortly in that, shortly after the year starts. So, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
Mike Carroll's not here for the CARCS report, but it is in the packet. One thing that we didn't mention, but is in the packet, is Light at Monroe this Friday. So hopefully we can.
Sunday,
yes, thank you. This would have been very early. So it is a Sunday, so hopefully we can all be out for that. Finance update, Ms. Hazard.
So basically, my report is in the council packet a week early since we don't have a meeting next week, and I'm available for any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Hazard? Thank you. All right, individual reports, Pam?
Nothing further tonight.
Deputy Chief? Ben?
Actually, Mr. Camp, last week I wasn't here yet, but your email. Ironically, I sent you an email about your email not working.
That's right. I thought that was ironic.
Everything should be, you should be able to delete from Outlook Web Access now. It works fine. It just needs server updates and everything's fine. So, hopefully, you know.
And we're able to get your email. So,
excellent. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Swanson, anything else? Ms. Hazard?
So yes, one more thing. For those council members that might be interested, and I know all of you are, to be on the Finance and HR Committee next year, we are going to be asking for a meeting in January. The first meeting in January for the council is already canceled, so we're going to suggest January 9th. So if you could put that into my calendar, we would appreciate it.
Thank you. Chief Buzzner.
Well, I know many of you noticed the beards and the mustaches and the like that our officers have, and maybe one of you that doesn't really care for them, but what our officers are down there participating in November, and we decided to move it into December too, so each month they have to pay $20 if they want to participate, and we should come away with about $700 for that program. So, come January, they should all be gone.
Good fundraising.
Thanks, Chief.
Great.
All right. Monroe, this week is in your packets, and so we have a chance to take a look at that. City Administrator report, Ms. Knight.
Sure, just a couple of items. Note, obviously, our next Tuesday's meeting has been canceled, so November 28th. And then on the meeting for December 5th, just a couple of highlights. We'll be adopting the 2018 budget and amending the six-year capital facilities plan. And Ms. Hazard mentioned the meeting for the Finance Committee on January 9th. And in order to prepare for that, we're actually going to be bringing your committee appointments forward to you in December, on December 5th, in part just because all of the incumbents are returning, so we don't have to wait for new council members to be sworn into office in January. And that'll give us a jump then on the appointment for community transit too, which is due as well as the health district. So we'll get those moving along a little bit earlier than usual, prepared. On December 12th, then, we also have confirmation of your board and commission reappointments. And at the meeting, we'll also be recognizing their service to the Monroe community. So if you come a little bit early, there'll be some treats for that and recognition. And then finally, something that you haven't yet seen, but we'll be bringing for you for discussion, are sick leave policies. We're having to amend our sick leave policies to be consistent with recent changes to state law. You'll be seeing those as well. Any questions about upcoming agenda items?
Councilmember Kim.
Not a question about the agenda item, but since you're going to be moving the appointments to December and I'll be here on the 5th, I would like council to consider me for the planning and whatever, the 3 feet.
P4.
P4. I know it's P7. The P4 committee instead of legislative issue.
With my finance.
You would do that just.
So we do have the need for a couple executive sessions.
Right, so the two executive sessions that we're planning to have are on collective bargaining, which technically is not an executive session item, but we're still going to be talking about that behind closed doors. And then the second executive session that we're going to have is related to property pricing.
And how much time will we...
So on the collective bargaining, we probably will need 10 minutes, and on property pricing, we'll probably need 5.
Start to 12 or 15 minutes, and that will go into executive session.
No action to follow.
No action to follow. We are now out of the executive session, back to regular session. No other members of the business to forward. Councilmember Hanford. Motion to adjourn made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Campbell. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting adjourned. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.